$10 in advance from brownpapertickets.com. Thank you for loving Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, Vancouver.
You haven't had too much accordion already, have you? You haven't overdosed on accordions, have you? I want to encourage responsible accordion listening.
Hello and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 Co-op Radio, CFRO. Today is Friday, April 22nd, 2011. It is Good Friday, it is Earth Day, and it is World Lab Animal Liberation Week this week. So it's a big day today.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about all those three things too. Happy Easter, everyone. Happy animal friendly Easter.
Yeah, I know that it's Good Friday because I drove by the ferry lineup on the way here from Squamish and it was down the highway. So I'm glad I'm not in that. So today we're going to be talking about going vegan for Earth Day and some of the environmental reasons for that. We'll let you know some of those. Some of that info is going to come from the book Plant Roots, 101 Reasons Why the Human Diet is Rooted Exclusively in Plants by Rex Bowlby. And then we're also going to be talking to Brian Vincent from the newly formed Animal Coalition. It is called the Canadian Coalition Against Animal Research and Experiments, which also spells CARE. And he's going to tell us about that new initiative, and that's in light of Lab Animal Liberation Week. And then we are also going to be talking about why you should not buy bunny rabbits for Easter. And Allison, I think you have something to share with us that sort of touches on what we were talking about last week with Veg News.
Yeah, if you were listening to the show last week, you'll remember us talking about the whole Veg News magazine scandal that occurred, which was last week, when blogger Corey Girl broke the news that Veg News has been regularly using photographic images of non-vegan, that is, meat foods, in their print publication and website. When Carissa, Alyssa, and I were chatting about this before and during the show last week, I think one of the ideas suggested was that there should be a stock photography bank of just vegan food photos that Veg News could draw from, as well as anyone else, of course. I do a lot of graphic design work that requires the use of vegan food photos, and I know this type of resource would really come in handy even just for me. Well, someone has already gone ahead and snatched up this idea, and www.veganstockphoto.com, with the intention of providing a web resource that anyone can upload their vegan food photos to, and B, that anyone can use for free to get vegan photos from for non-commercial use. Now, I had wanted to check out the site myself this morning to start uploading some of my own food photos on it and to check out its usability and features, but for some reason the site wasn't working. But Carissa, you were able to get on last night to check it out and to use, so can you tell us your impression of the website thus far?
It was just sort of simple at the time, and it sort of said that on the website because it was just in beta, that they were just sort of letting you upload videos and sort of check out, or upload pictures, sorry, and sort of check out what it's going to look like. But it was really easy. It was just sort of, you sign up with a username and a password, and then you click on My Photos, and then it says Add a Photo, and you just browse through the photos that you have on your computer, and you title it, and then you just have to agree that the photos are yours, of course, and then that the photos do not have any animal ingredients in them, and there were no animals harmed in the photos, unless they are photos that are specifically of animal abuse,
right,
or exploitation, to sort of bring awareness to those issues.
So you could have, like, animal abuse photos. It's not just food.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And then there are other photos on there. There's sort of like on the left-hand side, there's different categories that you can use to click on, but it wasn't functional yet until they launched the site is sort of what it
said. They're supposed to launch it today for Earth Day, but I just went on it right now and it's still not working. But
I wonder if it's because there are so many people trying to get on it. I don't know. There were 37 pages worth of pictures
already. That's amazing. As I said, the website was supposed to launch today for Earth Day, so hopefully it'll be working later on today, and I will be sure to try to check it out again later. So I'm excited to have this resource, not only to use to my advantage to have a place to get photos for my work, but also as a place to contribute my many vegan photos to that I regularly take on my own so that other people can also benefit from these pictures. And I'm always taking pictures of vegan food whenever I go out. I always take advantage of that because I'm always going to need them later. Yeah. And animals. Whenever I see animals, I take pictures of them, especially farm animals, because those are animals that you don't really come in contact with every day around here in the city. So if I see a cow, I take a picture of the cow. If I see a pig,
just
I take
walking down Hastings.
Take a picture of the pig. And I always try to get a picture of myself with the pig because I love pigs. So anyways, it's such a great idea, I think, to have this this photo resource. And I commend Chris and Crystal Tate, who are the makers of a food product called Food for Lovers Vegan Queso, for grabbing onto this idea and doing something with it so quickly in the recent aftermath of all this, the online debate in the vegan community that has happened on this topic since last week. Chris Tate says, with veganism becoming mainstream, we need a reliable resource for vegan stock photos. This is a place where professionals of all trades can find reliable vegan stock images provided by photographers across the world. So perhaps I can say that one good thing that has come out of the Veg News scandal is that this website has been created. Also, this week, Veg News Magazine has announced that they will start developing their own bank of vegan photography to use in their publication. So that's a good thing, too. And just with the media, with vegan food and vegan issues, animal issues becoming more known in the mainstream media, I'm sure these vegan photo website resources are something that can be used among the mainstream publishing industry as well. So I do encourage you to check out www.veganstockphoto.com and see what you can find there. And I know I'll definitely be doing the same and look out for my photos there. So it'll say, I think you get to credit the photographer I read. So any photos by Allison...
I guess I wasn't really thinking when I signed up. I was like, oh, what am I going to create my username as? I didn't really think to put it as like my exact name. It says Carissa Ray, which is my middle name, but that's
so
not quite accurate.
Carissa Ray's photos too.
Yeah. So I just want to read the apology. Veg News did issue sort of an official apology that is sort of what everyone...
A definite official apology. Yes. There was the number one kind of non-apology apology, and then people didn't like that. So number two is the official apology.
Yes. So this is the apology that everyone was, I don't know, I guess expecting, which I don't think is outlandish to expect that you would apologize for... doing something that is basically against, like, I don't know, I feel like it's sort of against what the community sort of stands for, and we are all really
definitely
creative people,
considering all of the negative feedback they've gotten from the issue. Definitely. Yeah. If it wasn't clear before, it definitely is now.
And I definitely feel that like with veganism, it's sort of, you have to be creative because you are taking something that has, for a lot of people, like when you grow up for 20, 30 years eating meat and then you take that out of your diet, you really have to be creative, especially at first, trying to figure out how to sort of function without meat and dairy in your diet. So I think that vegans really are really creative, and I think that's really been shown by this website starting up, especially so quickly. So this is the letter from Veg News, and it says, "Dear Veg News community, we screwed up. With regard to our use of symbolic imagery in Veg News, our readers got it right. We wholeheartedly apologize. We assure you that we will never again use non-vegan photographs in Veg News. Here is our commitment to you. Recipes in Veg News will be represented only by custom vegan photography. Count on it. All stock images used in the magazine and website will be vegan. We will make sure so that you can be sure. Veg News will build and host a vegan photo bank to assure the availability of vegan stock images. Look for details in the coming days. We thank everyone for the invaluable feedback on this critical issue. We exist only to serve you and the vegan cause and are grateful that you are that you care so passionately about your work. The Veg News team is committed to restoring the trust we have earned for 11 years. Together, let's build a compassionate future. With gratitude, Joseph Connolly, publisher. So
that sounded very sincere to me.
Yes. I only wish that it had come out the first day, but that's all right. So, oh, and we also have a book draw that from last week. Allison, do you want to tell us about that?
Yes, we had Robert Cheek on the show last week. He's the author of Vegan Body Building and Fitness, The Complete Guide to Building Your Body on a Plant-Based Diet. And it was an awesome interview. It's online at animalvoices.org if you want to check it out. We are giving away a copy of his book. And so we're going to do our draw and announce the winner here. Drum roll, please. And the winner is Angela Pullman. Angela says that the aspect of fitness that she most wishes to achieve is simply making it a regular habit.
That sounds really smart.
Yeah, reading this book is sure to give Angela lots of encouragement to do that. I know it has given me, and I've already started using tips from the book.
Just listening to the interview last week, I was like, I think I want to read that and motivate myself to get out there. You know,
half the battle is motivating yourself. Yeah. The other half is actually getting to the gym and or doing, you know, getting those running shoes on. So congratulations, Angela. We'll be in contact with you soon to let you know how you can pick up your prize.
That sounds great. And another thing this week, it was on ecorazzie.com, was Mike Tyson was in a billboard that says to go vegan. I'm just sort of trying to bring it up here to read it to you. Just one second. But it's a picture of him with one of his pigeons that he loves so much. And you were saying that
he's
saw him.
He's a pigeon lover.
Yeah,
you saw him on Ellen. I don't know any other pigeon lovers. Oh, yeah, he was on Ellen about a month ago, and he was talking about his love for his pigeons. He loves pigeons.
Yeah, I think we talked about that before in a news story about how he sort of grew up with them or something. Or yeah, like he found some sort of a kinship with them.
It's been a long time love. But yeah. The vegan thing has been a short time thing, couple of years now. But he was saying in an interview recently how he wishes he had been born vegan. And, you know, it's going to be a lifetime commitment for him, he's saying.
That's great. So the billboard says, vegan, love animals, don't eat them. And it's him kissing one of his pigeons. And the billboard is in West Hollywood, and it's a partnership with Last Chance for Animals. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great to know.
Maybe. Do you think it'll still be there when we go down to LA?
Probably not. That's like in a couple, 3 months or something.
It might be there.
Yeah. Oh, we can look out for it. That could be one of the sites that we check out for. The Mike Tyson billboard.
Yes. All right. And do you have a PRA for us now,
Allison? Certainly do.
Welcome to Last Call, your jam jar of all that's good and sweet in UK rock and pop, only here on CFRO 102.7. I'm Gary Jarvis, your host, with you until 2 a.m. Last Call is the UK rock and pop music show with a heavy nod to the underground. We're here every Tuesday night at midnight following the Urban Renewal Project. Thanks again to the Urban Renewal Project crew for warming up the airwaves. Yeah. One, two, one, two. In the 1990s, here's Pete Doherty with Salone. That's Joy Division with Insight. That, yes, this is Last Call on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7.
As you said, this is Cooperative Radio 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver, Canada. You're listening to the Animal Voices show. So here are our upcoming events. Tonight, Friday, April the 22nd, starting at 7:30 p.m., there's going to be the Just Dance fundraiser for Earth Safe Canada. And this is happening at 2114 West 4th Avenue in Vancouver. Join Just Dance for one more night of family-friendly dance and meditation when all proceeds will be going to Earth Safe Canada, which is a local nonprofit organization that strives to encourage people to move towards a plant-based diet for health, environmental, and animal compassion reasons. Just Dance is an alcohol-free evening of dance that attracts dance lovers of all ages in Vancouver. It has been running for 18 years as a nonprofit and has donated thousands of dollars to local charities. This April, Earth Save Canada is proud to be the recipient. So the active meditation part starts at 7:30 p.m. The dancing starts at 9 p.m. And Just Dance has a bit of a different flavor throughout the month. The music on April 22nd tonight is going to have a contemporary beat-driven feel and features a DJ blending it all together that will no doubt get dancers sweating. The cost is $10, $8 for students, free for kids. For more information, go to justdance.ca or call 604-716-9599. And are you going to be checking that out tonight, Carissa?
I'm going to be sitting in a booth in front of the door to it.
Are you going to be boogieing tonight, as you said in your Facebook email?
I probably will be while I'm sitting at the Earth Save table telling you all about Earth Save and the things that we do.
Great. So on April 23rd, which starts tomorrow, to May 1st, there's going to be groups across the world that will be holding vegan bake sales. Each participating group chooses its venue, what to sell, and how to use its proceeds, the proceeds that are generated. If you want to find more of where there's one going on in your area of the world, go to veganbakesale.org. This event is called the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale, and it's in its third year. We had the creator of the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale, Gary Lowenthal, on the show 2 weeks ago to talk to us about it. We did a fun interview with him, and you can check that out. I don't think it's online yet, but it will be online, animalvoices.org. I'll probably put it on this weekend. So last year, over $40,000 was raised for different charities across the world via the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale, which is, I was thinking, that's a lot of cupcakes that have been made and consumed. $40,000 worth of cupcakes. I can't even imagine what that looks like. So starting tomorrow, here's some local worldwide vegan bake sales that are going on in our part of the world here in Vancouver. Tomorrow, Saturday, April the 23rd, from 12 to 3 p.m., Stop UBC Animal Research will be having a vegan bake sale fundraiser. This is going to be outside the People's Co-op Bookstore at 1391 Commercial Drive at Kitchener Street in Vancouver. This is a vegan bake sale to raise awareness about animal research and to generate funds for the important work of Stop UBC Animal Research. The sale is also part of World Laboratory Animal Liberation Week. That's this week. Saturday, April 23rd, as well tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. if you find yourself in U.S. Minster. Carmivore, the vegan shop, is going to be having a vegan bake sale fundraiser as well for the kitties. So this is at the Carmivore Vegan Shop at 610 Columbia Street in U.S. Minster. All proceeds raised will go to the Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association, and there will also be prizes raffled at the store on this day. And then on Saturday, April the 30th, from 3 to 5 p.m., Liberation BC will be having a vegan bake sale fundraiser in front of the Nice Shoes Vegan Shoe Store at 3568 Fraser Street in Vancouver. The local nonprofit animal rights group Liberation BC will be holding a bake sale at Nice Shoes, with all benefits going to animals affected by the recent tragedy in Japan. Their chosen charity is the Japan Earthquake Animal Rescue Support, a coalition made of Heart Tokushima, Animal Guarding Niigata, and Japan Cat Network. They do need bakers and volunteers. There's obviously still time to bake something for that. It's in a week. So if you want to help out, you can add yourself to their spreadsheet list. The online link to the spreadsheet can be found at liberationbc.org on that website under News and Events. And if you have questions or want more information about that bake sale, you can contact Becky at becky@liberationbc.org. That's B-E-C-C-I at liberationbc.org. Or call 778-991-7615. And are you going to be going to any of these three bake sales, Carissa?
I don't think I'm going to make it to the Stop UBC tomorrow, because it would take about 5 hours out of my life, unfortunately, because I live in Squamish. But I am going to be sending
hours.
Well,
drive there, buy a few baked goods, drive back.
I guess I could, but I would end up sticking around and, you know, helping out
for 4 hours or 3 hours.
Yeah, it's 3 hours. And an hour each way driving. But I will be baking for tomorrow, and then I'm baking for.
What are you baking?
I think I'm going to bake some pink lemonade cupcakes with vanilla frosting, which I baked earlier in the week to sort of test it out, and they turned out good. So I think I'll bake those and then maybe some pumpkin banana bread to see how that sells. Brian Vincent, who's going to be on soon, and I, we're testing out what sells well, because we're gonna
cinnamon buns.
We're gonna partner together and sell some stuff at the farmers market in Squamish this summer.
Cool. So if you have an animal or vegetarian related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver.
Just one quick thing to add to that people might find interesting. Carmivore is having a sale today. I'm just trying to check here. Is it 10% off for Earth Day?
Yes,
10% off. Yeah, 10%. And you can go online as well and use the promo code EarthDay10.
I think tomorrow, too, they said. The 22nd, no. 23rd? No? Okay.
No, they sent a message that they said that. Okay. They said it in error. Anywho, on now to... reasons to go vegan for the environment, since it is, in fact, Earth Day today. So I'm just going to read to you again, as I said at the top of the show, from Plant Roots, 101 Reasons Why the Human Diet is Rooted Exclusively in Plants by Rex Bowlby, which is, if you heard the show on New Year's Eve, is the book that I read after Diet for a New America about a year and a half later, and this is the book that made me absolutely go vegan. I couldn't even finish reading the book before I went vegan. So I'm just going to read to you now from the environment chapter. When we think of doing our part to help the environment, we think of protecting the oceans, the wilderness, and the forests, conserving energy and water, halting water pollution and soil erosion, and saving endangered species. The last thing we would think about doing is giving up our carnivorous habits, but it should be the first thing, because our environment's health, like our health, is greatly dependent on what we choose to eat. We limit our shower time to help with water depletion, but doing without one fast food hamburger saves the equivalent of 40 showers. We carpool to conserve oil resources to help with energy depletion, but animal agriculture consumes the same amount of energy as our automobiles. We worry about urban sprawl's impact on soil depletion and the land, but because of livestock agriculture, deserts are expanding globally by 27,000 square miles annually. We are concerned about oil spills in the oceans, but changing to a plant-based diet would do more to clean up our nation's water than any other single action. We recycle paper to save a tree, but a vegetarian saves 1 acre of the forests every year. We worry about sewage spills polluting our waters, but animal waste contributes 10 times the water pollution as the human population. We focus on a select group of endangered species, but don't realize that animal agriculture is accelerating species extinction to the point that we may soon have to add ourselves to this select group. Water depletion. It was once a seemingly abundant resource. It is now seen as a real threat to the stability of the world. Numerous countries are in dispute over its supply. The seeds of future wars are beginning to germinate. Stress in the Middle East revolves around the non-renewable resource. It is an ominous obstacle to peace, as Israel's economy relies heavily on its use. Civilizations have collapsed due to its scarcity. And as we begin to see our country's reserves depleted, we must change our course. I should just mention here that by our country, he means America, but it's very similar in Canada. Or face potentially grave consequences for our nation's security and our own survival. It might be hard to believe the preceding paragraph does not refer to oil, but it doesn't. It refers to water. Water is the resource that should scare us most. After all, with oil there are energy alternatives. With water there are no substitutes. Maybe we have never looked at water in this way. Maybe now we will be more vigilant in conserving it. What steps could we take? Pledge to finish our shower before the hot water runs out. Promise to wash our car only when it's covered with enough dirt to write, "Please wash me." Badger our absent-minded neighbor to turn off his automatic sprinklers when it's raining. Go without water when brushing our teeth. If we all pitched in and applied this attitude towards water conservation, is it possible we could eliminate our water shortage problem? While our enthusiasm is admirable, the impact is negligible, because our personal water consumption is just 5 to 8% of our total water usage. Our water is going elsewhere, but where? Instead of taking shorter showers, we could forego one fast food hamburger, since it takes the equivalent of 40 showers worth of water to produce the meat in one hamburger. Instead of waiting to wash the car until we could write in the grime, we could forego meat and dairy products for one day and conserve 3,700 gallons of water. Instead of brushing our teeth without water, we could forego steak dinners for the family once a month for 1 year, since it takes the equivalent amount of water to service all the needs of a family for 4 for 1 year. Instead of jumping on our absent-minded neighbor for his flagrant waste of sprinkler watering, oh, go ahead, he deserves it. As it turns out, 70% of our total water consumption goes to support agriculture, and 80% of that water goes to support animal agriculture. This includes irrigation water for grassland and feed growing, water for drinking, and water for sanitation. This means that more than 50% of our total water usage goes toward meat, dairy, and egg production to support our self-induced carnivorous killer or sick diet habit. In essence, one half of it goes to satisfy our craving for bologna and cheese sandwiches. So what, some might mutter? There seems to be plenty of water on this planet, and besides, isn't water a recyclable resource? Of all the water on this planet, we have access to only 1/10,000 of 1%. Doesn't that sound crazy?
Yep.
The rest is inaccessible in oceans, ice caps, or deep underground. The evaporated water from irrigation does come back to Earth as rain, but most of it falls in the ocean or somewhere else where it is no longer accessible. Thus, it is only partially recyclable. Most of the water used for irrigation in the U.S. is in the underground Ogallala Aquifer, the largest body of fresh water on Earth. At the current pumping rate of 13 trillion gallons a year, estimates are that it will be gone by the year 2030 simply because groundwater drawdown is 25% higher than its replenishment rate. Texas has used up 25% of its underground water since 1975 and has consequently lost 14% of its irrigated land in that time. So the next logical question might be, could the continuing depletion of water be reversed if Americans made the switch from a meat-based to a plant-based diet? Where it takes 2,500 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of beef, it takes 25 gallons to produce 1 pound of wheat, 24 gallons to produce 1 pound of potatoes, 33 gallons to produce 1 pound of carrots. So we're talking about like 33 gallons versus 2,500 gallons. Think of how much more water we would have if people switched to a plant-based diet.
Well, I mean, even if you're just in it for the environmental reasons, mm-hmm. that's a huge reason to not eat animal products. Mm-hmm. And that goes for the dairy products and the egg products as well, because they're all really intensive for using water resources.
Yeah, and they're all so interconnected as well, right? Like mm-hmm. the dairy industry is so connected to the meat industry, and same thing with the egg industry
sure.
and
yeah.
the meat industry. So the following amount of water is required to produce a one-day food supply for the average American. For the sick diet, it's 4,000 gallons, and for a plant-based diet, it's 300 gallons.
And you just, I mean, just look at that comparison. Mm-hmm. You just cannot argue that even just for the environmental aspects,
yeah.
going to a plant-based diet is really what is needed, I believe, in order for this Earth to have any
yeah.
chance of sustaining itself in the future.
Yeah. So it says here that if all Americans adopted a vegetarian diet, irrigated agriculture would be unnecessary and our water losses would be reversed. You could go back to long showers, clean cars, and wet toothbrushes and not feel
that
guilty.
You should.
Yes. but you could. We could even get back on good terms with our neighbor. When we do the math and find the vegetarians save more than 1 million gallons of water a year. But do they really save it? Maybe it's more accurate to say they have used water per nature's plan, a plan that included an ample supply of natural resources mm-hmm. sufficient to support all life on our planet, always. So I was going to read more than that, but that took a lot longer than I thought, so... Those are just, that's just one aspect is the water, but there's so many more. And yeah, I would really suggest checking out that book because I do think that it's really great. And you can get it at the library. Oh, and you're listening to 102.7 CFRO Co-op Radio. This is the Animal Voices Radio Show. And we have on the line with us now, Brian Vincent from the Canadian Coalition Against Animal Research and Experimentation. Brian? Hello? Brian, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. Hello. Okay. So first, can you define for us what vivisection is?
Well, vivisection is kind of an antiquated term. But by the way, I'm getting a really bad echo.
Yeah, we're getting the echo, too.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to follow. Do you want to take a moment? Because I can't really...
Do you have your do you have your radio off, right?
Yep.
We're doing everything correct from our end here.
Okay. If I get lost, my train of thought is
yeah. I don't Yeah, I think it's not going to turn up on the actual air, though, so we'll see.
Okay. Vivisection is an antiquated term that I don't really use anymore. Most people who are under 40 years old have no idea what the term means. It technically means live dissection. But when people talk about animal research today, they're talking about far more than just live dissection. They're talking about psychological experiments, drug experiments, addicting monkeys to cocaine, that sort of thing. So it's not a term I use very much anymore at all.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering, because it sort of sounds like one of those words that you don't really know what it is, and I think it makes people... It has an ability to let people sort of off the hook of trying to figure out exactly what it is, so thank you for that. And so can you tell us sort of what sorts of experiments animals endure in laboratories?
Well, I mean, all sorts of experiments, everything from obesity studies on monkeys, making them fat, to addicting animals like monkeys and rats, cocaine, University of British Columbia here in Vancouver, researchers have cut open the backs of cats and built restraint columns along their spinal columns in order to study restless leg syndrome, given electroconvulsive shock to recent cat monkeys in Parkinson's disease studies, forcing monkeys to smoke, study the effect of cigarette smoking, psychological testing, isolating animals from their mothers, for example, taking non-human primates away from their mothers right at birth to study the trauma of separation. So there are lots of different experiments done on animals, most of them highly traumatic to the animal, stressful. In Canada, extremely painful procedures can be done on animals. For example, the Canadian Council on Animal Care, which oversees research in Canada, categorizes procedures by invasiveness, and under categories D and E, the most invasive, you can burn an animal alive in Canada. You can force toxins down their throats. You can give them electroconvulsive shock without any anesthesia.
Well, that does not sound like anything that you would expect. And yeah. So how many animals are subjected to that in Canada every year?
Well, that number is rising. In 1998, the Canadian Council on Animal Care, which keeps track of statistics in Canada, said that 1.8 million animals are used in research. That number has gone up to 2.5 million in Canada. In the U.S., it's over 20 million animals suffer and die each year in U.S. laboratories.
Wow. A lot of the examples that you just gave us, they sound like things that it doesn't sound necessary at all to separate animals from their mothers. When can't you just talk to people who have experienced that? If that's what you're trying to figure out, why wouldn't you just talk to the people who have experienced it rather than trying to simulate what they've gone through with animals?
Well, exactly. I mean, a lot of these studies, well, all of the studies are unnecessary, but a lot of these studies are laughable. The fact that you could certainly study children who have been separated from their mothers. Even with drug addiction, there are plenty of people who are highly addicted to drugs and treatment centers who could be studied. So this research is unnecessary, it's cruel, and in many cases it's actually hazardous to human health. There have been a number of drugs, for example, that passed all clinical trials for animals. Vioxx, an arthritis medication, for example, thalidomide, a drug pulled off the market in the 60s, and hormone replacement therapy used in millions of women every year still. All of those drugs pass clinical trials, and yet each and every one has posed a serious health risk. Thalidomide caused horrific birth defects. Vioxx killed over 140,000 people from heart attack and stroke before it was pulled from the market. And hormone replacement therapy has been linked to ovarian and breast cancer.
So why does the research continue if it's harmful to humans? Is it required by law?
That's a very complicated question to answer because there are so many factors involved. One is economic. You're talking about billion-dollar industries here, everything from the pharmaceutical companies to the universities to lab animal breeders to those who provide equipment to laboratories. So economically, there's an incentive for all of these interests to perpetuate animal research, and they put a lot of pressure on government to continue. Secondly, people kind of get stuck in a rut. I mean, in order to be a researcher...
Status quo, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to publish, it's publish or perish at universities. In order to publish papers, you're encouraged to use animals, and UBC is no exception to that.
They are a major research university. That's what they're known for, and they're so traditional and old school. They are an old school.
Yeah.
That is what it's done there.
Exactly.
Is animal research required for the products that are being tested?
In some cases, yes. In Canada, some drugs are required to be tested on animals. So you see that there's, and in the United States as well, you see that there's not only an incentive, but lawmakers have written in to laws requirements to test on animals. For example, in the United States, many women don't realize this, but Botox, every batch of Botox used to, so that people can have get rid of their wrinkles, is tested on animals. When women get breast implants, the materials used in breast implants are tested on animals. So, you know, the government requires that, even in the name of vanity.
Isn't the material that's in Botox, isn't something of it from an animal as well?
I believe it's botulism.
Okay.
But they test Botox on thousands of mice for each batch.
And why do you think that putting the word research on what is happening allows it to be that you can torture animals and burn them alive and things like that? Why is that?
Well, that's what's so shocking. If you were to go to your neighbor's house and abduct your neighbor's cat and cut open that cat's back and put implants in their spinal column, or if you were to hook up, you know, a guinea pig to a car battery and give them electric shock, you would rightfully be brought up on cruelty to animal statutes. But you can do the equivalent in a laboratory, and it's called science.
That's a really good point that you bring up. So how do laws justify having that double standard? Because you're right, cats and dogs are protected. Mm-hmm. People get really riled up and angry, the public, right, when they find that a dog or cat has been mistreated. But then it's allowed to do the same thing and worse to lab animals. So what is your feeling about, just I guess psychologically and in society, why that is allowed?
Well, the animal researchers and the whole industry has done a very good job of convincing the public that this is necessary. So it's a necessary evil. And UBC is especially shrewd at this. You know, they talk about how their animal care standards are high, and they treat the animals well, and they don't suffer. So, you know, the public wants to believe the researchers. But face it, UBC is a highly esteemed institution. It has a great reputation. It's revered in Vancouver and across the country. Nobody wants to think that UBC is doing any harm to an animal.
And no one would think that, because it's not something that you just assume, right? You give the institution the benefit of the doubt, right? UBC is a leading institution, university, in research, in teaching. No, they're not going to harm animals. Why would they? Why would anyone, right? We just don't think of that.
Yeah, and of course, people were rightfully outraged about the Whistler dog sled story, 100 dogs who were brutally killed. But when you think about that story, those animals were killed relatively quickly, and it was a relatively small number when you compare that 2.5 million animals in Canada alone, not just, you know, in the United States with 20 million, but in Canada, 2.5 million animals are used in experiments every year, and some of those animals endure years of suffering. A non-human primate can be in a lab for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And people, you know, don't bat an eye about that, but of course they're very upset about what happened in Whistler. You may remember that just 2 months ago we broke a story about 7 endangered sea turtles who were at UBC. Well, they had been experimented on for 10 years. They lived in a little tank, 10-meter by 3-meter tank, and they were going to be killed simply because the building where they were housed was going to be demolished. So those animals have been used in research for many years.
Brian, I think a lot of the reason, too, is that the public isn't aware, because I know that when that story about the sea turtles got to the mainstream media, people were outraged about that, even though people can't really relate as much to turtles as they can to cats and dogs, but people do appreciate them, right? But I'm just curious as to how you have seen that, being that your group, part of its mandate is to educate the public on what is happening in, as well, specifically at UBC.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the first step, is education. And when we launched our campaign just a year ago, our goal, our objective first was to raise awareness about animal research, because I think if you ask your average person in Vancouver what goes on at UBC, they had no idea.
Right. You've got to give them the facts first.
Yeah, 100,000 animals a year used in research projects just at UBC. Most people had no idea that UBC was cutting open the backs of cats, giving electroconvulsive shock to monkeys, capturing wild songbirds and beheading them, forcing mice to smoke, putting toxins down the throats of 1 to 2 day-old piglets. This is all happening not only at UBC, but with taxpayer money.
And where do they get, like, cats and dogs when cats and dogs are used for research? Is it from animal shelters or strays?
Well,
or?
I should say, for UBC, they claim they do not experiment on dogs anymore, and we have no evidence to suggest that they are experimenting on dogs on campus. They may be doing it off campus at other facilities. In terms of cats, we have no idea the sourcing. What is very troubling about UBC and universities across Canada that do research is they won't disclose information. Most Canadians are unaware that freedom of information laws in the country protect researchers. They exempt them from disclosing any information about their research. So when we have submitted information requests to UBC, like, where do you get your cats from?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you get your monkeys? Are they wild caught? Are they, you know, imported from China, where many monkeys are, wild caught monkeys are, and forced into research? We get no answers. And they hide behind exemptions within the provincial freedom of information law. In addition, we have filed a federal freedom of information request to a federal agency that funds UBC. We got a 70-page document back. 62 pages were completely blank with a big X across them.
And are there laws, though, in Canada as to whether or not you can take animals from shelters and research on them, or that's allowable?
Well, there are pound seizure policies and laws across Canada, which means that with the exception of Ontario, where it's still legal, you're not supposed to be able to get animals from pounds and put them into labs. Now, I was talking to somebody who has been a member of the Canadian Council on Animal Care in Toronto, and she was telling me that there are loopholes in those laws and that some provinces actually have animals from Ontario shipped to them.
Oh.
Now, I'm trying to get more information about that, and I have no idea if UBC is part of that network, but she was claiming that animals are indeed taken from pounds in Ontario and provided to labs elsewhere in Canada.
And do you know, like, because I know in the U.S. it seems there are a lot more animals that are euthanized because of shelter overpopulation. Is it sort of a practice down there that that occurs?
Well, it's a money-making business both in the United States and in Ontario, because labs in some cases are required to sell their surplus animals to a laboratory, and they might get $50 per animal.
Yeah, I don't hear of labs breeding dogs and cats for research, even though they're used a lot.
Yeah.
They breed other animals, rodents, for example. So I would think that it would make sense that is where they're sourcing out their dogs and cats from.
So I think that's something important for listeners to sort of...
Well, again, what's difficult about that is because the researchers and the institutions are so shielded, when we ask those kinds of questions, we don't get answers as to where these animals come from.
And
that's one of the reasons we formed the Canadian Coalition Against Animal Research and Experimentation, or CARE, because there are many animal advocates across Canada, from Halifax to Toronto to Calgary and Victoria, who are asking the same sorts of questions. They want to know, for example, where does University of Toronto get their dogs? where do they get their primates? Because we've heard that they have some wild-caught primates that have been shipped to their university. And these are questions that have gone unanswered so far.
Can you tell us more about the coalition that you've recently formed and who is involved with it?
Yeah, we formed it just last week. And then it's over 40 organizations across Canada, groups in Halifax and Toronto, as I mentioned, Calgary, and other places. And the need was apparent that we had no such coalition in Canada. In the United States, many groups work together to fight animal research, but we had no organized effort here in the country. And many of the advocates for animals in those in other parts of Canada, you know, they're running small organizations with a handful of people. They lack the resources. They lack expertise. They're not sure where to go, where to start to launch a campaign against an institution in their community. So the coalition provides a clearinghouse of information. It connects everyone so that we can share that information and provide expertise. Stop UBC Animal Research, which helped form this coalition, is going to provide training and advice to organizations. And then, of course, our letter that we just sent to the Canadian Council on Animal Care was our first action. It was signed by nearly 50 organizations. And we called on the Canadian Council on Animal Care to end animal research in Canada. Realizing that's going to take some time, we also called for a list of reforms as the Canadian Council on Animal Care phases out animal research.
And would you like to tell us about those, what they are? Or?
Sure. Sure. One would be to provide better reporting, because as I mentioned, it's very difficult to get information about universities in Canada and how many animals they have, what species of animals, what they're doing to the animals, how many animals are exposed to highly invasive procedures. And in the United States, all of that information is posted online at the National Institutes of Health or the U.S. Department of Agriculture, where you can see lab inspection reports. We have no such database in the United States, so that's the first. The second thing would be to end all Category D and E experiments, which are the most highly invasive, the ones where you can burn an animal alive, for example. The third would be to provide better representation on the Canadian Council on Animal Care. There are 22 member organizations as part of the council. Of those 22, only one is an animal welfare group. Every other group out of those 22 has a vested interest in perpetuating animal research.
All right. So what do you think that this is going to sort of bring about more people trying to start their own organizations to sort of combat animal research in Canada? Is that sort of one of the goals?
It's certainly a starting point just to have this resource. So thank you for being, you know, one of the people that are starting this coalition, Brian.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it will hopefully serve to inspire people from across Canada to become involved because they have a place to go to now.
Yeah. Exactly. So is there a website, or how do people get involved with you're saying that the coalition is going to provide information resources, for example, if an individual or a group were interested in getting that information, who do they contact, where do they go?
Well, right now, Stop UBC Animal Research, I'm the director of both Stop UBC Animal Research and the coalition, so our organization, Stop UBC Animal Research, is serving as sort of the headquarters for the whole coalition, so they can contact us through our website, which is stopubcanimalresearch.org, or they can email me at stopubcanimalresearch@gmail.com.
That's great. And so I guess we should just reiterate that you're also having a bake sale as a fundraiser tomorrow to help out with Stop UBC Animal Research to sort of raise funds for that, and that is it from 12 to 3 in front of the People's Co-op?
Yep, it's from noon to 3, and there'll be a lot of tasty vegan treats there and information about our campaign, how people can get involved.
As well as the coalition?
We'll probably have our coalition letter there so people can see, you know, how many groups signed on and some of the reforms we called on for to the Canadian Council on Animal Care.
Well, that's great. I really encourage people to go out to that and check that out and learn more and mm-hmm. check out the website.
It's a great location. I think the weather is going to be good. I think you're going to have a great event there.
I hope so.
All right. Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Bye-bye.
The Last Bastion against the CBC Barbarians, the longest-running classical music radio show in Canada, West Coast Classics. Rare and unusual classical music from all over the world, from 2,000 years ago to the present, all presented in its social and historical context. West Coast Classics, every Wednesday morning from 9 till noon on Co-op Radio.
Since it's Easter this weekend and today is Good Friday, we just sort of wanted to talk to you about why it's not a very good idea to buy a bunny for an Easter gift.
They're hard to take care of, for one thing.
Yeah.
That would be my number one reason. Yeah. I can't take care of anything living. Plants die on me.
So you should not get a bunny.
Big responsibility. No, I shouldn't have a bunny.
Lori Chortik with the SPCA says that every year they deal with an influx of people returning rabbits, because bunnies do not make very good pets for children, but that's sort of what people do is, I don't know if it's going out with your children and seeing bunny rabbits and then deciding that's a good idea.
Oh, they're so cute. Yeah. Can I have a bunny, Mom?
Yeah.
Mommy?
Or just like that would be so cute to give you an Easter bunny, you know?
Mm-hmm. This dye is for purple or pink for Easter, and put Easter eggs under him.
So Lori Chortik said that rabbits make wonderful pets for adults, but they are prey animals, so they don't like being held, which is something that I never really thought of. But
they're wild animals.
Yeah, it's definitely important to really...
Prey animals, as in they get preyed on.
So they don't want you holding them,
they're at the bottom of the food chain.
Yeah. So that's an important thing to sort of think about. Like, you sort of have to think about where an animal fits in, sometimes within... like an ecosystem as well as within your life. It's a very big life decision to take on an animal.
Do you know why bunnies reproduce so quickly?
Because they're prey, I would imagine.
Because they get eaten and killed so frequently as they need to. That's how nature works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense. I never really
thought of that. Yeah, and that's why sharks have a really long gestation period and don't reproduce so quickly, because they're at the top. They're apex predators. They're at the top of the food chain. And if bunnies and sharks were to live in the same environment, those sharks would be eating the bunnies, is my prediction.
Yeah. These are the things that they should really teach you in school, right? why are we learning all of that?
We're just figuring this out now as adults. I'm just putting like two and two together from, you know, working on the show here.
Yeah.
People don't really think about these issues. And and the thing with bunnies. And another thing I learned about bunnies is from Joanne, who has a lot of bunnies, who used to be on our show here, is, you may have mentioned already, they die easily. They have heart attacks easily. They get scared really easily.
Yeah.
They're very delicate creatures.
And she said that they... assuming it's because they're prey, they don't show signs of, like, she had one that died over the winter and
show signs of sickness
at all.
They don't really show signs,
like,
they just sit there and, you know, look happy.
Her bunny was just sort of like hopping around and hopping around, and then just all of a sudden keeled over, and then she had an autopsy on him and he had like cancer.
Aww.
So it's like he had been sick for quite a while, but because he's a prey animal, he doesn't want to show that he's sick, because in the wild that would get him eaten.
Makes sense.
Right away, right? So very interesting things. And she also told me that it takes her like 4 hours to clean her bunny room, because she keeps them all in one room together because there's so many of them. So a lot of work.
Yeah, it is a lot of work. If you're going to have a bunny, you need a space for them. You need to be able to care for them, give them the right food. You know, Joanne spends time getting the proper food for them. And the fact is that they are wild animals. Where are you going to keep the bunny, right?
Yeah. They need a lot of space to be able to hop around and all of that too.
Well, if they're in the wild, they're going to have as much space as they want. If they're in your backyard or in a room in your house, that takes away their freedom. So think about that as well. If you were a bunny, would you want to live in a little cage or whatever, right? Or even a backyard? Would you want to think about that? Think about those kind of things. Is what would I do if I was in that bunny's shoes, you know, if bunnies wore shoes?
in those bunnies' feet.
Yeah. Those big, cute feet.
So just something to think about for Easter. I suggest not buying a bunny rabbit unless you really think.
I don't think we can suggest buying a bunny rabbit. No. Even if you're going to have a bunny, rescue the bunnies for one thing.
And I think that is. With that, I was thinking about this last night. If you go to a bunny rescue, they're going to tell you all about what is necessary. They're going to make sure that you are the right person to take that bunny home. So if you have any misgivings whatsoever as to whether or not you are fully ready to commit to adopting a bunny rabbit, I think going to a rescue, you should be doing that anyway, but it's also
learning about the bunny, not just haphazardly saying I'm going to buy a bunny for my kid. It's Easter. Those are the bunnies that get returned to the rescue or get abandoned in the rescue places. Take them on.
So it's
people often just drop them out on the street or whatever, right?
Well, that's what happened with UBC or UVic. That's why they ended up with them, so many bunnies, right?
On the street I grew up on as a child, I remember just seeing bunnies on the side of our street because they had escaped or someone had just let them go. Yeah. And suddenly, and then there were none, the bunnies disappeared because they got eaten.
Yeah, so like buying a bunny rabbit and then taking it to a rescue is just further taxing the rescue's resources as well. So something to think about.
Yeah, and good suggestion. If you do want a bunny, get it from a rescue association and get the facts first. Spend some time, learn about taking care of the bunny, and think about whether you really have the space, the time, the money.
I always think about like adopting an animal as maybe it's not as huge of a commitment like financially as a child, but it's the same sort of idea. Like you're adopting an animal into your life, and that's a living creature, so it's important to think about.
Yeah. So you have been listening to the Animal Voices show here on 102.7 FM Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, Canada. On next week's show, we'll be having a feature interview with Shiri Joshua from Soul Academy, who will be speaking about the animal-human bond with us, as well as pet loss and grief and animal spirituality. We will also be having a panel discussion next week on the upcoming Canadian elections that are occurring on May the 2nd and what that means for the animals, and we'll be talking about the different running parties' positions on animal issues. I thought it was particularly important to bring that up next week, being that it's not every day we have a federal election here in Canada, so we'll be definitely
I took the time to contact all of the MPs in my area and ask them what their stance is on that.
Thanks for telling me that. We should definitely talk about that next week.
I would suggest that to people to try that over the week and then tune into the show next week so that they have enough time to get back to you, because I think our show is 3 days before
actually,
the election?
It's on the 29th. Election's on the May 2nd. Yeah. So definitely, if you have anything to tell us about what your thoughts are, let us know as well so that we can just relay that information to our listeners. So remember, I wanted to talk about the membership drive, which ended last week. Oh. If you made a donation to Animal Voices, thank you very much. That would be to Co-op Radio for Animal Voices. We ask that if you made a donation online at cooperadio.org, which you can still do, if you could please send us an email just to let us know so that we can put you in our draw for one of our fabulous prizes, and we'll be contacting our donors shortly. So radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, and go to our website animalvoices.org, where we have our all of our shows posted. There are most of our shows. We're getting them all there. So the show will be there this weekend. Go to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Twitter is Animal Voices YVR. And in honor of speaking about the bunnies, while we were chatting there, I got a song that we're going to have playing now called the Snuffle Bunny Song. Okay. So we'll see what this sounds like. It sounds very cute, perhaps. So remember to be kind to the animals, and we'll talk to you next week. Do. It's not a
This is Radio Ego Shock with Alex Smith.
This is Alex Smith, and I have a problem. Important news continues to pour out of the damaged Fukushima Daiichi plant in Japan, along with radiation reaching my home here on the west coast of North America. And it's going over all the way to Europe and even to North Africa and the Middle East. At the same time, about a dozen listeners have sent email reminders. This nuclear accident, even at its very worst, can never kill as many millions of people as climate change. Though Fukushima radiation may continue to damage the chromosomes of plants and animals for up to 1 million years, global warming appears to be driving a mass extinction event. Certainly, unless there is an explosion of every volcano on Earth to bring cooling, our greenhouse gas emissions have triggered a warming event which will last at least 100,000 years. American scientist David Archer